Today's topic is very beautiful, personality rehabilitation. So what is personality? So the human personality has four aspects: the body with which we perceive the objects, the mind with which we feel with emotions, intellect which thinks, and then the consciousness, which is the life principle. Now the body, all of us have the same human body. Yes, there is a difference between male and female. As we get older, the body changes, different color, different race. But in general, we all have the same heart, lungs, liver. There's not much difference. And the consciousness, Brahman, the Lord, that is within and without, is one. It's not that my God is different from your God. In fact, the Gandhi Jayanti this year, the topic is, what is God and is my God different from your God? So if you want to know the answer, come there. They asked me to speak on Hinduism. But in a nutshell, if we think God as a form, yes, there will be difference. Krishna is different from Jesus, is different from Guru Nanak, is different from Buddha. But their essence of all is one, the conscious. And that's what, so the, in fact, there is no difference between my God and your God. It's only when I think myself to be this body, then I think of God with a form. But we have to go to the essence. So the essence of all of us and of all the gods in heaven and of all the stones and rocks and trees and everything, the essence is one, Om consciousness. So this body is the same, the consciousness is the same. What distinguishes me from you and from others is the mind, where I have different emotions. Somebody is more kind, somebody is more loving, somebody is more compassionate, somebody is more angry, somebody is more jealous. And the conflicts arise because of these differences in the emotional makeup of the individual. And women say, oh, my husband doesn't understand me, doesn't understand my feelings. So it is the conflicts come in the emotional level. And it can be also between countries, you know, what is happening in the Middle East. It's not so much emotions, it is the conflict of intellect. Intellect is ideas. So my ideas are different from your ideas, my religion is different from your religion, my belief is different from your belief. So these problems that have been arising is either emotional differences or intellectual differences. And the way to rehabilitate is our personality is to work on the mind and intellect. Of course, the body we need, we all know you need to eat healthy, exercise. I won't spend much time on that. But today's talk will focus mostly on mind and intellect, and the consciousness, of course, is eternal, unchanged. So nothing you can do to that. Now, as I said, the mind and intellect work opposite to each other. Example, see, a mother comes out of a burning house. And then she suddenly realizes, my child is in there. Emotionally, she feels a strong bond to the child. Intellectually, she knows that going into the burning house is dangerous. I could get burned to death, but she doesn't care. She jumps back into the burning house. So when her emotions become very powerful, then the intellectual thinking no longer functions. And that's what they say, oh, I was so mad. And I couldn't think straight, and I said what I shouldn't have said, or I did what I shouldn't have done. So when the emotions become very powerful, then the intellectual thinking can go down. On the other hand, suppose a judge is dealing with a person who is convicted of murder. Now, whether he should give him the death sentence or give him life imprisonment or 15 years or 20 years, there he has to use his intellect. He has to use the law. What is the law of the land? What is precedent? What is the right thing to do? And there emotions do not come in. That's why a judge will never judge, will excuse himself if his family member is on the in the case, or even a lawyer, you know, if they're family member, or if they say, do you know this person, then they will excuse themselves. This reminds me of a joke. So this lady, old lady, was a witness in the trial. And so the prosecutor asks her, madam, do you know me? She says, I know you very well. You are lying, you are thieving, you have stolen from the state, and I know you are a very dishonest lawyer. He gets scared. How does she know? And he says, do you know the defense? She says, I know him. He cheats on his wife. He's a philanderer. He's after every girl in town, and he has slept with. So I know both of you very well. So the judge calls them both. He says, if any of you people ask her if she knows me, I'll have you cited for contempt of court. Just don't ask her if she... So when somebody's emotionally involved, like a surgeon will not do surgery on his own child. Why? Because he's emotional. Then the intellect cannot function. So when the intellect is very strong, like I said, when a person is deciding a case, then he has to decide it intellectually, not based on emotion. Oh, he belongs to my community or my race or he's... No, whatever is the law, I have to decide. And how do we deal with each other? We deal with the mind and the intellect. So my mind and my intellect deals with your mind and your intellect. At this moment, our relationship is what? At the mind and intellectual level. You are listening, you are understanding, and then you are saying, it's kind of boring, or I'm not enjoying it, or whatever. You know, whatever your emotions are, or wow, it's wonderful, and you know, so whatever. So the relationship is between the mind and the intellect. In the commentary, it is said that like a person goes to somebody's house, he does not go to meet the house. He goes to meet the inmate, the person who lives there. And if that person is not there, then he leaves. He says, okay, I came to meet her. She's not here. I will leave. So similarly, the indweller in this body is the mind and intellect. And so when we meet each other, even though we may hug each other or shake hands or whatever, but even the hugging is an emotional act, is an act of the mind, even though the body is doing it. So it is the mind and intellect that deals with each other. So if you want to rehabilitate the personality, you have to work at the mind and the intellect level. Unfortunately, the modern world spends all its time in taking care of the body. Come on in. We spend so much time taking care of the body. We spend time in exercising, we spend time in eating, we spend time in acquiring, we spend time in possessing. So a lot of time is spent in taking care of the body, and we forget that it is important to take care of the mind. All the money we acquire, the house I build, the car I get, everything is done to take care of the body, which is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But in the process, we forget to take care of the mind, which is the emotional component, and the intellect, which is the component of thoughts. Just for the new ones, just to very quickly summarize this chart, this BMI chart, with the body, I perceive the objects. So I see, hear, smell, taste, touch. With the mind, I feel the emotions, like joy, sorrow, anger, hatred. And with the intellect, I think thoughts, concepts, ideas. What is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. V stands for vasanas or desires. And Om on top, the one in red or orange, represents God's presence in us. You can call it Allah, you can call it Father in heaven, you can call it Jesus, you can call it Krishna, Ram, whatever you want to call. But so we are talking about the body is the same and the consciousness is the same, but it's the mind and intellect which we need to work on. And when we nurture our mind and intellect, how do we nurture? By the scriptures, by contact with the scriptures. Just as a hen sits, nurtures her egg, and after a while the baby comes out, the baby chick. So similarly, the the knowledge of the scriptures and the teachers nourishes our mind and our intellect and gives us right ideas. But if this is neglected, if my mind and intellect is not nourished, it becomes putrefied, it becomes smelly, it becomes ugly. And that's why all the problems in this world today, all the conflicts, it is because I don't like you, or my ideas are different, or I think different, or so anger, hatred, jealousy, whether at the individual level, whether at the national level, whether at the international level, is all based on neglect of the mind and intellect. If the mind and intellect is nurtured with right ideas, then such a mind is purified and is ready to love. But the same mind, when it is not nurtured, when religion is not looked at, and what is religion? Religion is the teachings of the prophets and the gurus and the teachers in the form of the scriptures. So how do we nourish the intellect? In the beginning, I'll talk about the intellect, and then I'll talk about the mind. So the first way to nourish the intellect is to find a guru, find a teacher whose ideas match with mine, who thinks kind of the way I do. That's very important, to find a teacher. And it could be somebody who is alive, you can talk to, or somebody who has passed, but you can relate to his books or his teachings or his videos or his talks. And they are available on the internet. All the great teachers of the present and the past are all available, talks. You can just Google it or go on YouTube and you can get talks. So I have to tune my mind with the teacher's mind. I have to connect it. Exactly. I have to tune it so that the way the teacher is thinking, that is the way I should think. Not that to be brainwashed. I'm not saying that one should be brainwashed. But the religious teachings are very symbolic. They are not straight. For example, in the Bible, there is a very beautiful parable. There were these ladies who were standing in a line, and there was a race, and they had to go, say, 50 steps to the line across. But it was very windy that day, and they had to carry a burning lamp. And the race was, whoever reaches the other line, 50 steps is not much, but when there's a heavy wind and you have to shelter the lamp, it's very hard. And so they said, go. And few of them started running fast, and the lamp got extinguished. Few of them very slow, barely moving. And in that process, you know, the lamp, again, they hardly moved. But there was one lady who had focused that I have to reach there. She walked steadily, consistently, carefully guarding the lamp, and reached across to the other line. So this kind of teaching seems to make no sense. You know, why would Jesus say that in his parables? But it shows us the path of the spiritual seeker. There are some who are in a hurry. I have to just... And they are so restless, and they are so... Mind is so stressed out. I want this. And in all that hurry and agitation and stress, they lose sight of the goal. They very quickly get disillusioned. I didn't like this teacher, so I go to that teacher. I didn't like that book, I go to this path of philosophy. I like Confucius, then I like Buddhism, then I like German. So they are running around because they are in a hurry. And there are others who are procrastinators. What's the hurry? God is always going to be there. I'm still young. You know, let me enjoy life. So they just waste their life and barely progress. And in the meantime, their life ends. The light extinguishes, because our life is limited. The bulb life, or the life of the lamp, is how much oil we have. Some people have enough oil for 60 years, some for 70, some for 80. Nobody is going to live forever. The oil ultimately will run out. So they waste their time in just procrastinating. But there are few who are very consistent, who choose one path, are completely focused and carefully. What do you mean by protect the light? That means protect the mind from temptations. The mind should not run out into temptations. Keep it focused on the goal. and they reach. So see this parable, otherwise it makes no sense. Unless, you know, you can, the teacher is indicating something, but unless my mind is tuned with the teacher or somebody explains it, it'll be like, it's a children's parable. What is the sense of it? So I have to tune my mind with the teacher, that is intellect. And then I have to improve my concentration. How do we improve our concentration? By focusing on one idea, by focusing on maybe one mantra, pick up a mantra, chant that, and gradually increase the focus of the mind when it is running in 100 directions. In meditation, we focus the mind either on the form of the Lord or on the sound of the mantra or on some concept that what I am this or I am that. So concentration can be improved. And the idea is that from the form of God, you have to go to the formless. Otherwise, we get into conflict. You know, Jesus is better or Krishna is better or Buddha is better or Guru Nanak, because we are focused on the form of God. But from the form, you have to go to the formless, where there is only one. And as long as you are stuck in the form, you will be limited in your thinking and you will become a fanatic. The Bible is superior, or this teaching is better, or this. And then you will go around destroying others' ideas, or burning temples, or destroying idols. All this happens because of the wrong understanding that there is only one God, one consciousness who takes different forms. You can call him Jesus, you can call him Allah, Father in heaven, Krishna, Buddha. So the forms are many, but the formless is one. So go from form to formless. It's okay to love a particular form. I love Jesus, or I love Guru Nanak, or I love whoever, my devotee, my form that I love. But I do not limit God to only that form, because God is everywhere. So in everything, in all plants, birds, animals, everything is God. So go from form to formless. And how do you improve the mind? By memorizing. They say memorize, especially Sanskrit. I read an article recently, memorizing Sanskrit shlokas, verses, significantly increases the brain power, the brain capacity. It is very, very important. In fact, in the olden days, people knew the entire Vedas. Thousands of verses they memorized, because there was no writing. There was no written language 5,000 years ago when the Vedas came. And so the guru would just recite and the student would listen and memorize. And then memorize the exact, not only the words, but the tones and the inflections. Everything would be perfectly memorized and then passed on to the student. It's only later on when Vedvyasji came, he actually wrote them, I know, compose them. But until then, it was passed on. So, what I would suggest is everybody memorize the Gayatri Mantra. The Gayatri Mantra is fairly simple, and you can Google it. You can go on YouTube and listen to it, and face the sun and recite it in the morning, and memorize it with knowing the meaning, that who am I? And when you do that, and then you can slowly start memorizing other Sanskrit mantras. Even maybe, I'm sure, Latin, those hymns, you know, probably have the same power, you know, that. But I know for a fact that Sanskrit, memorizing Sanskrit, definitely increases your brain power, your concentration. So that is at the level of the intellect. Now, what do I do at the mind level? So at the mind level, what gets tired when I say I'm tired, I'm exhausted? Did you lift some bricks, or did you dig a ditch, or did you make a building? No. All I did was sit in an air-conditioned office and sit on the computer, and I'm exhausted. I'm tired. Don't talk to me. I had a hard day. What did you do? What gets tired is the mind. It's the mind that is fatigued. Nowadays, very few of us have physical jobs, where you actually have to, you know, do a lot of physical work, do construction or do some welding or do some, you know, bricklaying. Most of us work in a mental job, or even if I'm driving, it is the car that is driving. I am not, even if I'm a salesman. So the fatigue comes at the mental level, and stress comes at the mental level. When we say I'm stressed, I am upset. It is all at the mental level. So how do we relax the mind? One is by relaxing the body. So sit quietly, take some time. Maybe if you have a break during the day, sit for 10 minutes instead of running around and talking to people. Go sit in one corner and just relax the body. If you have a recliner at work or something, just recline for 5 or 10 minutes and just breathe and do nothing. And you will find that when you relax the body, the mind automatically relaxes. So practice relaxation of the body. And then what else gets the mind tired is when there is doubt, anxiety, fear. I'm not sure if this will happen. I don't know. You know, there is so many problems, or I'm afraid. What will happen to the economy? What will happen to my finances? What will happen to my children? I'm worried they are in college. They are having a good time and enjoying themselves, and I keep awake at night. I hope she's eating. I hope she's, you know, oh, she doesn't even remember mom. She's out with her friends having a good time, and mother is all up all night. Poor thing, she doesn't answer my phone. I keep calling her and texting her. Why? Because she's too busy having a good time. But we unnecessarily worry and we get fear. So they say, what do? Breathe. Just when your mind is anxious, when you have doubts, when you have fear, just take slow, deep breaths and surrender to the Lord. Lord, that is your daughter. You gave her to me. Now she's gone to college. Now she's yours. You take care of her. Who am I? You know, I am nobody. I was just a custodian. I watched her for 18 years, took care of her, nourished her. Now she's on her own. Let her deal with her life. How long can I go with her and protect her? And yeah, I can. Whatever I can, I do. But ultimately, you surrender to the Lord. So the growth is inner. The growth is not outer. The personality rehabilitation is inner. The inner personality of the mind and intellect need to be rehabilitated. Other things that give rest to the mind is love. Love and gratitude. Love and gratitude first towards God. Just turn your mind in love to the in God, in devotion to the Lord. And they say, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says, turn your mind in devotion to the Lord. He will purify it and return it back to you. So the mind that is agitated becomes quiet when it thinks about God, and think about God with love and gratitude, not with fear, not with, oh, he's somebody sitting up there, he's going to punish me. No, he's all loving and compassionate. And then this love has to be not only for God, but has to be for all. So I have to love, you know, my family, my neighbor, my children, even people who don't belong to my faith, my color, skin, my nation. So love for all. And meditation is one of the best means to quieten the mind. When you sit in meditation, your mind becomes so still, and with practice you can do that. With practice and with detachment, you slowly develop a healthy detachment. Detachment means does not you don't love the world, but I do not depend on the world for my happiness, because I have found happiness within. So in meditation is the most powerful way to quieten the mind. So how do you quieten the mind? Relax. Remove all doubt and anxiety by breathing, by love, by meditation. And what happens to an individual whose mind is still and whose mind is full of love? He becomes a magnet. We automatically go towards a person who is loving, who is kind, who is peaceful. If somebody is very agitated or angry or disturbed, say, just stay away from this guy, he's just trouble. But if somebody is very loving, very kind, very compassionate, then such a person we want to be with. So that's what they say, that in life, develop these qualities of love, compassion, and then become a magnet where you attract everybody. People should be attracted to you. People should not be repelled by you. So that magnetism you find in saints. People who are spiritually evolved, saintly people, when you meet them, you feel that, oh, these people are so kind, so loving. And that's why when the saints and they spoke, even though very few people in the beginning heard them, but their message spreads far and wide. Jesus only spoke to a few followers, but there are billions of Christians. Buddha only traveled in a very small part of India, but there are billions of Buddhists. So these saints and prophets, their magnetism is because of God's presence within them. And that is the essence of this particular verse. So what this chapter says, develop your mind with love, your intellect with right knowledge, and then automatically your personality will develop upwards towards God. So that is the goal. That is personality rehabilitation is what? Becoming one with God who is within us. So that is the essence of this chapter. We'll end here. Anybody has any questions or comments about what we talked today? Anything you agree or disagree with? anything you'd like to add?
This isn't work.
Right.
Eradicate that bad energy and attract more. Like, one is work, but I don't want a good work because that pays the bills. So, how can I attract more good energy in my work environment?
That's a very good question. So, I think good energy comes from within. Mm-hmm. Good energy does not come from outside. It can come from outside in the sense of contact with scriptures, contact with teachers. In a place like this where we meet and discuss is a place where as soon as I walk into this building, my mind becomes so quiet. I try to come here Thursday afternoon a little earlier so I can prepare, and immediately the mind becomes still. So from the outside, by contact with places that have good energy, and within through knowledge, through meditation and through breathing. So as you learn to meditate and as you learn to breathe, your mind becomes still, and then with practice of meditation, practice of love, devotion to God, slowly you develop the inner strength and inner energy, and that's very important. So if you want good energy, you have to find it within. You can develop it from outside, but ultimately, so even if you are in a place where supposedly there is bad energy, say you have no choice, you have to go to work there and there's a lot of conflict, there's a lot of problems, learn to detach that I'm here to do my job. I don't know who was telling me one time, you know, I hate this place, I hate this work. I said, you are here to work, right? So you say I'm here from 8 to 5 to do my job. So I do my job to the best of my ability with dedication to God, that it is God's work I'm doing, whether I'm in the oil business or whether I'm a teacher or whether I'm an accountant or a doctor, whatever I'm doing. If people are fighting, let them. That's not my concern, as long as I am not involved. See, if I get involved in the conflict, somebody doesn't like somebody and I take sides and then I will be part of the bad energy. But I say, I'm here to do my job, and I just keep breathing and I keep chanting the mantra within, remember God's name, and then just do the work and then let people fight. So what will happen is you are creating a fortress of inner strength. Then the world cannot touch you. See, if you have done enough meditation, enough, and look at the lives of saints, how many problems they had, how many conflicts, how badly they were treated. But they never forgot God, and their goal was clear, reaching God and spreading God's message to all. So that kind of personality, if I develop within, then no matter how bad the energy is, and not only that, but once I have good energy and peaceful, that magnetism, I will be able to affect my environment. The same places, if there is conflict, but if there's one person who comes who is very peaceful, who's very loving, very kind, you get angry, he still smiles, then slowly that his calmness or his peace spreads. So I can be a source of good energy, but I have to start by developing it within. If I don't have it, it's like I don't have any money, how can I help others? I don't have any strength, how can I help others to lift their load? You know, somebody needs to carry a heavy bag. If I am a weakling myself, so I have to develop my strength to help others. I have to earn money to help others. Same way, I have to develop emotional strength within, loving, compassion, and positive energy to help others who are, nobody likes this negative atmosphere. It's not that they are enjoying it. So I can only do it if I have strength, if I have the energy. So I hope that answers your question.
That's very good. I like it, but sometimes, like for example, I was doing that, and the person had screamed at me, and then I just responded with kindness. Okay, very good. I didn't bring any negative back. And then later on, another colleague said, it's because with kindness that reflects weakness. And then they said, you need to scream back at them. But I didn't agree with that.
No, actually, kindness reflects strength.
Yeah. Exactly.
Kindness reflects strength. It is shouting back is weakness. It's the other way around. I mean, yes, if there is something that's happening wrong, and if you can fix it, you do it gently, with calmness, quietly, and tell, okay, this is not right, what we are doing, and this is how it needs to be fixed.
Calmly.
But if somebody's shouting and you shout back, all you're doing is adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
Then he'll shout more and you'll shout more and then everybody will shout. So, yes, I have to, it's hard sometimes, but I have to maintain my calmness as much as possible.
Yeah.
But thank you. That's a very good question. I had to think how to answer that. It took me a while. Thank you very much. Yes.
I just want to comment on what you're saying. A couple weeks ago, I was here and I was feeling a little...
more strength to us, like practice some sort of a detachment, which is which goes along with it. This is not my body. These thoughts are not mine. These emotions are not mine. So what's behind there is something that's very powerful, but that has no word. There's no way to describe it. So this is just the influence and the presence there. You know, practice eye contact and then, control the twitchings and all of this, and just show, you know, a little bit of stoicism. And then I think that will help. I'm telling you, it's hard for me, it's hard to practice. I have people, even in my family member, who misinterpret that, and they see it as a weakness. I know it's not, but it's just that they attempt to cross over those boundaries.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. One, you should not become a carpet anybody can walk, you know, all over me. Yes, I have to set boundaries. Like he says, okay, this is okay and this is not okay. But you can do it calmly and politely. And maybe not when the person is angry, but later on when you have time to talk to that person. But say that this is what you said, I didn't like it, or this is what you did. So one has to, you don't have to be a mat and anybody can walk all over you. You can be firm, but you can at the same time be polite. And so I think that is where the inner strength can only come through regular practice. Thank you all for your comments.